SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And we're back on the horse, or if you're a hobbit or a dwarf, you're perhaps back on the pony, but we're ready to roll. And I am so glad that my good friend Dave Kale is here to save the day. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, Father.
It's so good to have you back. I missed you a lot, especially last week when I was flying solo. My goodness, that is a tough thing to do for a non-expert like I am. So I dearly missed your commentary and your explanations. But fortunately, I had your show notes, so you were still there virtually, in a way. Now, this week is an important week for Tolkien fans, and especially related to The Hobbit, because tomorrow, we're recording this on Wednesday, but tomorrow is September 22nd, and that is Bilbo's birthday. How do we know that it's Bilbo's birthday? I mean, it's a book, it's a story.
True, and not only is it Bilbo's birthday, it's also Frodo's birthday. If you recall,
yeah,
they share a
birthday. Wow. Was that a coincidence?
Yeah, it's almost as if somebody just designed this whole story. So the way we know is that the Hobbits actually somewhat share our calendar. They don't have the same years, but they appear to have the same months and days as we do. And coincidentally, Middle-earth must have the same, solar orbit and whatnot, because its year seems to last about as long as our
year. It must be the same planet, because we talked about this on Secrets of Middle-earth in our latest show. We did an episode, which was fascinating to talk about the cosmology of Middle-earth. So the stars, and a lot of the stars and constellations are the same.
Yep.
They just sometimes have different names in yep. Middle-earth, but it's the same sky.
That's right. Indeed, I think Tolkien sort of early on intended this to be a prehistory of our planet. It seems as though later on he may have had sort of second thoughts about doing that, but he never really addressed it. But yeah, so they share a calendar, and the Hobbits specifically, the Shire calendar is quite similar to the Gregorian calendar, although my understanding is that there are actually a few discrepancies, and so there's some debate about whether their September 22nd actually perfectly matches up to ours.
Interesting.
So some people celebrate it on September 14th, believe it or not. So
really?
According to them, we've missed it.
Wow. They're the pure purists, probably.
Yes, that's right.
I'm already proud that we remember the September the 22nd. I already think that is pretty geeky to outsiders.
Right. Those people are really geeky, the people who say September 22nd is actually on September 14th.
It's almost the debate about when to celebrate Christmas and Easter. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always – well, I think Christmas is the same, but Easter, there's always like the different calculations, whether you're in a Gregorian calendar or not.
That's right. So anyway, back in 1978, the American Tolkien Society declared this week Tolkien Week, and sort of that was a more formal recognition of the holiday. It's not an actual legal holiday, but although I think people were informally celebrating Hobbit Day before that. And so, tomorrow is Bilbo and Frodo's birthday. We know because the Fellowship of the Ring opens up the very first chapter, a long-expected party, with that massive birthday celebration of Bilbo's. It's Bilbo's 111th birthday and Frodo's 33rd birthday. And so it's like not only do they share the same birthday, but the fact that those two highly significant ages align is very interesting. So
111 and 33.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
That's right. And you add it up and you get 12 gross, 144.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely. And so if I am to celebrate this memorable day for Tolkien fans, how do I go about? Are there traditions during Hobbit Day? Is there something that I can do to feel more connected to these two amazing hobbits? Do you know of any what fans are doing during days like these?
Yeah, I know some of it. It's unfortunate that it's not actually a legal holiday, because a lot of people have to celebrate most of the day by going to work. there's a lot of things going on this week. For example, the Middle Earth Network, our friends over at the radio station, mm-hmm. are going to do a sort of extended live broadcast tomorrow evening. East Coast time.
Oh, cool. This show might actually be part of the lineup.
Yeah.
Because we're also, yes. So actually we're saying tomorrow, but you might be listening to this on Bilbo's birthday. So
that's right. Yes. So we're celebrating it right now. So they're going to do that. They're going to have some special guests on. I know that theonering.net is having a barbecue in Los Angeles this weekend.
Cool.
I'm actually going to go.
Really?
Meet some of the theonering.net folks.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that is great.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
So that I think is a pretty common way for fans to celebrate. Go and eat a lot of food.
Yeah, so it's just eating a lot of food. It doesn't really you don't have to make rabbit stew, I hope. Because that's gonna be difficult.
Have to make coney stew. Although that would be very appropriate. So
I could walk barefoot all day long.
Yeah,
that could be a nice shot.
You're filming homage. Something tomorrow, right? You should show up barefoot.
I could, and then you know people could focus on the hair on my toes, and I can say this is to honor Bilbo. I'm sure that a lot of people will appreciate that. Not. So, but you know, there are ways to celebrate this together with other Tolkien fans by joining, especially online, because I guess for that barbecue, they're probably not going to live stream that on theonering.net. But
no, although I'm going to propose that to them, so we'll see
they should. That should be so much fun to kind of
on their Facebook page. They have like 60 people signed up already. So.
Oh wow! They should do like an international celebration of Hobbit Day, similar to. You know, we just recently had the Talk Like a Pirate Day, where mm-hmm. you know people just hook up and they we should have like Talk Like a Hobbit Day.
Yes, I totally agree. We should. So if our listening fans are curious and they want some ideas, they're gonna throw something together last second for tomorrow. The website WikiHow, the community edited how to do things manual website, has a Celebrate Hobbit Day entry. And there's an article on Wired.com entitled Seven Geeky Ways to Celebrate Frodo and Bilbo's Birthday with Your
nice.
Kids.
Oh, nice. Nice. Ah, that's
from a year ago.
That's a great idea to celebrate it with kids. And it could actually be an incentive for those kids to read The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that is awesome. You could do like a Hobbit Day with your kids. I'm sure that kids would love to do that.
Yep, I think that would be fantastic.
Mm.
So I want to make a plug for a friend, one guy who is celebrating September 22nd, Bilbo and Frodo's birthday, is John DeBartolo of the Lonely Mountain Band. And they are releasing a new album entitled Second Breakfast, and it releases tomorrow. So.
Awesome. And I'm looking up their website right now, and there is actually a tune up on their website.
Mm-hmm.
Can we play that? I think we can.
Oh
right?
Yeah, he would love it if we did.
Okay, let's listen a bit. Sounds good. The moment the music starts and you get like, yeah, I love this song. It fades out. So you have to You have to probably get the CD, or I suppose this is also a digital download somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think you can also stream the whole thing online on somewhere on his site and also on the mymiddleearth.net site. So you can test it out before you buy, which is always great.
And it's very affordable. The digital download is just $7. So mm-hmm. that's pretty cheap. So, and $10 for the CD and download bundle. Yeah, awesome. Awesome to see that there's still, musical creativity around The Hobbit.
Definitely. There's also another gentleman named Mark Gunn, who goes by the moniker The Celt Father, who does all sort of Celtic inspired music. And he's got a new album in the works that I think he's going to release next month if you like this kind of music. There's actually a lot of these bands who produce this Tolkien inspired music.
Yeah.
And
I love classic, that kind of stuff.
I
play Lord of the Rings Online, and that's the kind of music that I like most. It's kind of Celtic stuff that you hear in the Shire when you're walking around there. it's got a nice groove when you visit the pubs, of the various the Green Dragon and everything. You hear that kind of music, and so. But it's always the same tunes. That's the downside of that game. You always hear the same music, and so if you like that kind of stuff, you might as well just play your own CD in the background, which I often do. I just turn down the music of the game and I just play, either the Lord of the Rings music from the movies or music like this in the background. And it definitely adds to the overall experience of the game. By the way, speaking of which, Lord of the Rings Online is gearing up for a huge expansion that's coming soon. This is, of course, not really Hobbit related, but still kind of Tolkien related. And it's the Plains of Rohan and that whole area is going to be added to the game. And I've already seen some video of those areas, and it just looks beautiful and very realistic. Did I tell you that I'm now playing that game in 3D?
I heard a rumor, and I was trying to figure out how in God's name that was true.
Well, you've got LG has a 3D monitor that works with passive 3D. So I cannot really stand the 3D with the active shutter glasses, where it kind of has this flickering and it alternates the images and kind of shuts down one eye to show you one picture and then it opens up to show the other one, and I get a headache of that. It's really jarring. But LG developed this passive 3D where basically you've got a film over your screen. You don't see it. You can just use it as a 2D monitor as well. But there's a polarized screen basically, and it divides the screen up in lines, and one line is polarized in one way, and the other line is polarized in the other way, and it sends different images to those lines, and so you put up the same glasses as you would use in movie theaters. So it's passive technology. It's very lightweight glasses. And it is pretty darn good. And especially, games like Lord of the Rings, which are beautiful, beautifully designed. If you watch the thing in 3D, it is a totally different thing. It has a wow factor you wouldn't believe. Especially, like these big hillsides of the Shire, and then the Mines of Moria are just fantastic, and it's such a different experience from playing the game in 2D. Even though the game wasn't designed for that kind of technology, but the cool thing is that it basically works with any game that runs in DirectX 9, which is kind of a display technology for Windows. And so I've been very much enjoying walking around in Middle Earth, and it looks more realistic than ever. So I can't wait for these new regions to explore, and of course to also integrate that in our sister show, The Secrets of Middle Earth, which is basically what we do. We just travel through Middle Earth and talk about the lore and talk about the history and the stories, and you find that at middleearth.sqpn.com. So, back to Bilbo and to his birthday.
On the Lord of the Rings note, Lord of the Rings Online note, one thing I wanted to toss in, another thing that's happening this week to help celebrate is Casual Stroll to Mordor is doing a fundraiser for the Child's Play charity. I don't know. Are you familiar with the Child's Play charity?
Nope.
So go to and listeners, go to childsplaycharity.org. That's just spelled the way it sounds. And what it is it's a charity that was set up by Penny Arcade, the web comic and website, back in 2003. And they raise money and also donations of toys, games, books, and other things for children's hospitals around the world.
Oh, wow.
Last year, they raised over $2 million worth of stuff, which is incredible.
How cool.
And they raise money and donations for hospitals across the U.S., in Canada, Great Britain, I believe Egypt, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, it's really quite incredible. And so Casual Stroll is going to do a fundraiser for them tomorrow, not tomorrow, Friday night Eastern time. And it's called Fellowship Walk. And basically you donate money. You know, it's basically kind of like one of those sort of real world walk charities where mm-hmm. you donate money, I think, based on how far you travel or something like that. So anyway, look up if we have Lord of the Rings online players listening who are interested, look up Casual Stroll to Mordor Fellowship Walk and go participate and help them raise money. It'll be great.
Love it. Looks mm-hmm. absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that is really cool. It's so cool that somebody's finding a way to try and make the world a little bit better place while celebrating Tolkien Week.
Definitely. I was already starting the jingle, but I don't know if you can hear those jingles, so sorry for the interruption. Let's introduce our next segment here for a sec.
Confounded old Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I ain't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Freak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
So, a jingle to introduce our next segment, which is the news from the set of The Hobbit movies. And I try to give an overview of all the news, basically, that we that we saved up over these weeks that we've not been podcasting. But there is still a lot of news left to discuss, and I'm always excited to also kind of speculate about that news and the tidbits that we heard. So what's going on in New Zealand? They are currently filming the second batch of footage, even filming for the second movie already. And so what are the news stories of this week?
Well, the one that's gotten the most play was an interview that Evangeline Lilly did with the website SFX from Britain. And basically, she was talking about a variety of things, including her concern that Hobbit fans are going to reject her character.
Yeah. That was surprising. I saw just a short segment of that interview, and or didn't see it, but I read it, and I was very surprised to learn that she is actually a purist, a Tolkien purist, and that initially she didn't even want to see the Lord of the Rings trilogy. She's like, "How dare they make a movie based on these books?" And I was so surprised because I figured, you know, when I heard about Peter Jackson enlisting her for The Hobbit, is like, okay, he just needs like a few female characters, and so he goes for a famous actress, and she has kind of this elf-like look. So, well, I never expected her to be a real Tolkien purist / fan. That makes it a lot more acceptable to the fans, probably, I guess.
Hopefully, we'll see. It all depends. We may blame her for Peter Jackson adding characters to the thing, in which case, we may not care how much of a purist she is. But it is kind of funny, and I feel bad for her. She's really worried. Apparently we must have a bad reputation for being really, really stingy.
I guess so. And you know, the people can be vicious online and
that's true.
Even though like 99% of the people will be praising you and applauding what you do, there's always this 1% that's very vocal and very hurting. And I guess that actors are just as much humans as we are. You remember the bad feedback, and you don't really register the positive stuff. So, yeah, I can imagine that this is such a huge production. There are going to be millions of people watching this, tens of millions. And so there is going to, even if it's just 1% of the people that are going to slam you for that role, that's still a pretty big group of people.
So let's read one of her quotes. Mm-hmm. They asked her, Tauriel is a new character in the mythology, so as a book purist yourself, that must be frightening to ponder how fans will react to your part. And she says, yeah, I am very concerned to this day that people will watch the film and I'll be the black mark on the film. I know how adamant the purists are, and I'm one of them. That said, upon reading The Hobbit again as an adult, I can see why additional characters were needed to round out the story as an adaptation, especially the female characters. I think that's fair enough, and I'm perfectly willing to give her the benefit of the doubt, her character and her as an actress. So mm-hmm. I hope it's wonderful, and we love her.
Yeah, well, I think you can trust that Peter Jackson will do a good job writing mm-hmm. this role, and it will be very much in line with what Tolkien wrote. And and again, I think we've said this before. He will probably even use stories in the Silmarillion or other books as a source of inspiration for this character, just as he did with in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. So I'm not too worried about it. I think it's actually probably in general it's going to be a good thing for the movies, because this will it will broaden the audience for this movie. If it's just a male thing, just everybody's male in the movie, you're going to miss out on a certain demographic that will never watch the movie. And so the more people watch The Hobbit, the more people will start to read the rest of the stuff and will become Tolkien fans as well. So mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing. And, you know, I'm pretty confident that just as he did with Arwen and some of the other female characters in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, these are going to be very strong women. And he doesn't write two-dimensional characters. It's not just because there needs to be a female in the story. I'm pretty sure that he will create something that goes much more in depth than just, oh, well, we needed a female face on the screen.
I agree. And I think that there's a lot of the characters, like, it's not essential to the story that it be entirely male. I don't think that's the essence of the story is its masculinity. So mm-hmm. I'm fine with it. As long as they're done well and the acting's good and the writing's good and it's entertaining, then I'm sure we'll all accept it.
Mm-hmm. And the movie is written, of course, not just by Peter Jackson, but also by Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens. And so you got two female writers in there already.
That's right.
Which is probably very good.
And I'm sure none of these things will impact the worldwide box office.
No, I don't think so either. It might change Evangeline's career, though, if she, you know, is part of this phenomenon. It's going to, just as much as Lost dominated her life for what is it, 6 years? This is going to be extremely important for at least the next 4 years. She's going to be able to make the rounds of all those conventions and
she's going to be doing fan conventions until the end of her life for both Lost and The Hobbit.
If she wants to, of course. There are also actors that never do that. Usually it's the B actors that don't have a career that go to all these conventions to still make a buck. You know, the red shirts from Star Trek that are just in this one episode, and they keep telling that same old, you know, story about how they bumped into, you know, whatever, Spock in the bathroom. And oh, well, there's a market for that as well.
There certainly is.
What else is going on in New Zealand? Do we have any other news?
Peter Jackson's production company, 3'7" Limited, filed paperwork related to potential filming near Queenstown Hill and Glenorchy and Tucker Beach. It seems as though they're probably going to be doing some kind of filming in that area.
Interesting. Do we know where that is?
No, I haven't. I haven't Google Mapsed it yet. I'm ashamed to admit. Maybe okay. I'll go do that right now.
I could do that as well. That's what I did last week when we talked about Lake Town, because there are very strong indications of the location where they will film Lake Town, and it's a gorgeous area. But I had to use Google Earth to find it, and the cool thing of Google Earth is you see the context, you see the entire area, not just a few snapshots. And in that case, you know, there's three big lakes in that area plus mountains, and it just seemed like the perfect place for Lake Town.
So it looks like Queenstown Hill is just north of Lake Wakatipu and south of Wanaka. It's sort of definitely in the southern half of New Zealand. It is really near a large lake again.
Oh yeah, or a big river. There's this river underneath it.
Glenorchy or Glenorchy is northwest of that, at the northern part of this Lake Wakatipu.
A lake? It looks like a river, but my goodness.
Yeah, because it's longish, isn't it?
It looks like a big snake, but it is actually it's closed on both ends, so it is a lake. Mm-hmm. Amazing, and huge mountains also in that same area.
Yes.
Oh wow.
So, seems consistent with the kind of terrain that we've been expecting them to film.
Yeah. So what could they film there?
There'll be a slow build-up in film activity from October 3rd, with the busiest period being November 14 to 22, the application says. Filming activity will be 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Holy moly. Wow. And could this be... Yeah, what could this be? Could be lake. That could be just scenes in the mountains, or I don't know. It is a very mountainous area, but it's not the tallest mountains. Those are more up north, according to Google Earth, at least. Do we have any information from the blogs? Were there some people from New Zealand blogging about this stuff?
I was checking the New Zealand Noldor blog from Jack. He doesn't have anything about it, so we'll have to get him on.
Interesting. Well, they talk in the article about going there with helicopters, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like they're gonna have to drop in on the helicopters.
That seems to indicate
that they'll be flying on only one day at Tucker Beach, with 180 flights expected.
Oh my goodness! So this is going to be it will involve more than 200 people. So that does sound like perhaps the population of Lake Town. I don't know. Or no, 200 people could just be the crew alone, and some actors. But this is going to be in a remote area, potentially even a mountainous area, if they have to go via helicopters. So just one of those places where I just love to go there and see for myself what it looks like. But it's cool to see that they will be outside, and this is not just going to be a green screen movie, but a lot of it is going to be filmed out in the open.
I really appreciate that too.
It does lend the film its credibility. If it all would have been digital stuff, I don't know. I just watched the Star Wars movies again. I've got them on Blu-ray now. And one of the jarring things of the prequels is that it is all filmed in front of a green screen, and your brain can just tell that it's fake. It's digital. It looks beautiful, but it's still fake. It looks like a video game. And Lord of the Rings didn't look like a video game at all.
Yep, that's right.
So, that's right. Yeah, looking forward to getting some spy pictures from that area.
Yep. So, more film news. Well, this isn't strictly film news, but still film industry related. So Peter Jackson, apparently his post-production company is going to open an office in L.A. This is Park Road Post Productions.
Oh, so that's not Weta.
Nope.
No, Peter Jackson doesn't own Weta, does it? Does he?
I don't think he does.
I think it's more like Industrial Light and Magic. It's kind of he was the probably the financial injection and made it, it became big through his movies, but it's yep. They do a lot of work for other companies as well. So they're coming to LA.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe I should quit my job and go apply for one there.
Yeah, why not? You can always try to convince him to film The Silmarillion.
That's right.
Or The Children of Durin or something like that. Although he doesn't have the rights to that. But
No, they don't.
I've heard rumors.
Yeah. I've heard rumors that's something that's maybe down the road. Not necessarily for film, but I can say that I think the video game folks, like Warner Brothers Interactive, I think they're very interested in the Silmarillion property.
Interesting. Well, there are lots of stories there to explore, and it's a part. It's kind of like what they do in video games with Star Wars. There's this new online game that is in preparation, which is taking place in the era of the Old Republic. And they already did a few adventure games in the past, Knights of the Old Republic. And so this new online MMO is going to take place thousands of years before the actual movies that we know and love. And that gives them a huge license to basically still copy that the atmosphere of the movies and the planets and stuff and the culture that we know from the movies, but at the same time that they don't have to worry about the canon of the movies or the books, and they can just basically tell any story that they want. And I guess with the Silmarillion being kind of a collection of all sorts of different stories, there's much more freedom in that area, I think, especially if you go kind of before the Third Age.
Yeah, I agree. That's true. They really the Second Age stuff during the time of Numenor is what's happening. We have very little idea of what's going on in Middle Earth. He only gives us like high level stuff. And even, I mean, each chapter in the Silmarillion typically describes events that are as of almost epic. The epic nature of those stories is about as large as what happens in Lord of the Rings. So you could imagine that just about every chapter in the Silmarillion could have been a Lord of the Rings length book. So, there's no end to the stories that they could tell. They could totally do an Old Republic style game, and that would probably be really awesome.
And, you know, in a way, I guess it lends itself more to a game, or for a game, it would be less of a problem than making movies or a TV series based on the Silmarillion, because the Silmarillion doesn't have like central characters that carry you through the entire book. It is much more of a collection of kind of historical tales. But in a game setting, that isn't a problem because you are the main character. And in a way, Lord of the Rings Online, it's almost a bit of a dichotomy between your own adventure in Middle Earth, and then they still feel that they need to follow the Fellowship through the story still drives the game in a way. But it's kind of, the story is linear, and so you progress in time, whereas if you are in the game, you stay basically in the same time, and time doesn't really make any progress. And so that makes it very difficult for the game makers to integrate the story in a believable way, whereas with the Silmarillion, it's probably a lot easier. I don't know. You the player could be the connecting character of all these different stories and settings. Well, let me know if you know if you hear anything else about that. I'm all for knowing more about these games.
Well, from my understanding is that Christopher Tolkien just absolutely is totally against the idea of letting anyone have access to the Silmarillion licenses, but that his children and grandchildren might be more amenable to it. That's a rumor that I've heard.
It's a good thing that time does progress in this world, and that sometimes newer generations are more open to developments.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
I guess if Tolkien would still live, that we wouldn't have these movies. We wouldn't have this discussion.
Probably
there
not.
There wouldn't be movies.
He was marketing the film license, but maybe not. Maybe it's certainly not in the same way.
No, definitely not. Let's take a short break and then continue with our show about the secrets of The Hobbit.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
I want to take a short moment to talk with you about one of the sponsors of this show, which are our good friends at Bluehost. Bluehost is a hosting company that has this great deal. If you want to set up your own website about the world of Tolkien, if you are a gamer, a LOTRO gamer, and you have a blog where you kind of chronicle your progress through the game or share your photos, Bluehost is a great company. For just $6.95 per month, that is about a cup of coffee, like a special winter version of whatever, you know, Starbucks coffee that you might purchase from time to time. You can have your own website. You can set up your WordPress blog with just a few clicks of the mouse. No programming required. And you get your own .com domain name. That's included in the $6.95. So you get your .com domain name and you get unlimited storage space, unlimited bandwidth, and the ability to install a WordPress blog or a forum or both. You can build your own empire online just using Bluehost. If you want to sign up for an account, it's very easy. Just go to thehobbit.sqpn.com and click on the Bluehost banner, or go to the main website of SQPN at sqpn.com. Click on Bluehost and take a look at their at what they offer. It is a great service. I use it myself and for almost a year now for my personal blog, and I love it. And the price, I don't even notice it. It's so dirt cheap. And well, who knows? If you set up a website concerning Tolkien and you want us to plug it and you use Bluehost, just send us a note. We'll take a look and talk about it here on the show.
There and Back Again, A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. That age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
Well, age has not caught up with us yet, but we still feel spring and sprung, especially when talking about The Hobbit. Hey, we were talking before the break about video games, and in the show notes, I see that you have had the occasion to play Lord of the Rings War in the North last mm-hmm. week. What game is that?
Well, it's a new game that's being that they're putting the finishing touches on at Snowblind Studios, and it's going to be it's produced by and being distributed by Warner Brothers Interactive. And basically, what it is, did you play the old the Lord of the Rings video games based on the film ever?
Yes, I have one for the Xbox, I think. Yep. Isn't it called Battle of Middle Earth or something like that?
Well, there is that one, but there were the three that were just literally just basically just sort of, you know, the
hack
official
and slash
video game.
Oh, yeah. I played, I think, the second one and the third one, perhaps. Those games were pretty impressive. It was very
yes.
filmic kind of
War in the North is very much in the mode of those. It's actually set in the continuity of the films, but it's inspired by the sort of expanded legendarium in the books. So specifically in the appendix of the Lord of the Rings, we've discussed this before. There's a discussion that between Gandalf and the hobbits mm-hmm. after the fall of Sauron in Gondor, where they're asking him about the events of the Hobbit and saying, like, you know, that was a really peculiar episode. Why did you pick Bilbo for all that? How did that all come about? And Gandalf recounts this story about how he met Thorin one day in Bree and all this kind of stuff. And then he goes on to explain the importance that these events played in the larger War of the Ring later on. He just goes on to point out that it was it ended up being incredibly important that he found Bilbo, and Bilbo and the dwarves went on this adventure and ended up killing Smaug and destroying the goblins in the north and recapturing Erebor and restoring the kingdom of Dale and restoring the kingdom under the mountain and all this, because that ends up being a second front in the war for Sauron. And he speculates on how bad things might have been had Smaug still been around when Sauron arose. And the goblins had still been in the north and stuff. And so anyway, this game kind of goes off of that, and it's It's actually, I'll be honest with you, they actually misinterpret the quote. Because what Gandalf's saying is that there weren't any wars or anything in the North, any massive wars because of the events of The Hobbit. What the people who made the video game do instead is speculate that maybe there were wars anyway, and there were a set of heroes who you, the player, take control of, who take it upon themselves to fight those battles in the North while the Fellowship is traveling toward Mordor. And so the setup of the game is that you're in Bree, and Aragorn recruits you and a couple other adventurers and sends you north and says, hey, we need you to go take care of some things for us. And it's initially sort of an attempt to distract the evil forces up there from Frodo and get them to leave him alone. But then the story grows larger. So it's very fun. It's an interesting game. It's an interesting idea that that they looked and said, there are parts of the Middle Earth world that we haven't told stories in, we don't really see in the book. We hear about it. We see hints of it. But the main story doesn't take place there. So let's tell a new story in that area. So it's actually very similar to Lord of the Rings Online, what's going on there.
Wow. Let's take a listen to the sound of the trailer of Lord of the Rings War in the North, just to get an idea what we're talking about.
The storm we face is far worse than we imagined. The Ringbearer's quest continues toward Mordor. But to the north, a great army is gathering. If it is allowed to strike, it will bring the wrath of Sauron upon all of Middle-earth. Your journey no longer lies with the Ring. You must go north to face this darkness. You must go north to face Agandar.
Good. Actually, it looks better, way better than Lord of the Rings Online, which of course is kind of made for the PC. This is made for the game consoles and the Xbox and the PS3. So the graphics are fantastic. So what was your impression? It's kind of a fighting game, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it is. To add to the story, I was playing it with Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor.
No way, really?
and it was in it was great. They had put it into developer mode, like debug mode, so neither of us could die. So we didn't even have to be good. We were just running around smashing things. It was super fun. The graphics are beautiful. Corey and I were joking about the fact that we did find it amusing that the sort of premise of the game is based on sort of a very loose interpretation of this quote from the appendix. But we still love the idea of them, because Tolkien says in his letters that he fully expects and hopes that people will take his the story framework that he's created for Middle Earth, and that other people will tell stories in it.
So we're
totally down with the idea. Yeah.
Interesting.
And the graphics were beautiful. The gameplay was really fun. I'll be honest with you. I played a lot of video games growing up, but I don't play much anymore. And Corey didn't play a lot, so we were both kind of just sort of thrashing around, not particularly good. But it was quite enjoyable. It's a hack and slash action game. It's significantly more violent than even the films and certainly the book, but it's still quite fun. There's a lot of fun little the voice acting's great. You get to meet interesting characters. Like, we got to play with Elrond and Elrohir, Elrond's sons.
Yeah, wow. Those are also part of the Lord of the Rings Online. Uh-huh. Actually, we met them in I think the last episode that we did in the Trollshaws of Middle-earth, the Secrets of Middle-earth, but they, you know, they're not really, they're just standing there and giving you a new quest, but you don't really interact with them. But so they're part of this game as well. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's very cool. It was a lot of fun. We had to play for a while. There's a lot of interesting things, like they incorporate a lot of elements from even The Hobbit. For example, early in the game, you save an eagle, and that eagle is indebted to you, and so you can use him as an airstrike force.
Ah,
so you
can,
you're like, oh, there's a guy up on that hill firing this giant ballista at us. We can't get past him, and so you can you hit the right button combination, and this eagle swoops out of the sky and kills him.
Wow.
So
oh, very good.
It was great. We got to meet some folks from Warner Brothers Interactive and talked to them for a while about their sort of their vision for media and all the opportunities for telling new stories in the Tolkien world. So this was during the filming of a documentary about the game that's going to run on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh wow.
In about a month. And Corey Olson's going to be in that. So
Sweet.
It was really fun. And Father Roderick, I got to meet Sean Astin.
No way.
Nope. I sure
did. Oh, cool. Uh-huh. Okay,
yeah.
Details.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, I'll be honest with you. We watched him do his interview for the documentary, and so afterward, after they were done, like I actually exercised great restraint, not running up and talking to him. But Professor Olson had no such qualms.
He
just ran over there and started talking at him and telling. He was going on about how he thinks Sam is the real hero of the Lord of the Rings, and he said. He sort of had the impression that Sean Astin thought he was just trying to butter him up. And he was like, no, I really feel that way. So he's a cool guy. He was really funny. He during his interviews, they would ask him this question and ask him questions about what Lord of the Rings means to him and Tolkien means to him. And he would go on for like 10 minutes giving these really, really thoughtful answers.
Really?
And when they took breaks, he'd say like, oh man, I was supposed to be the comic relief. I'm not supposed, you know, I thought I was going to be funny and witty. And here I am giving these like really deep philosophical answers.
Awesome.
He's a very thoughtful guy. He's a very interesting guy. And he was really nice. He chatted with us for about 10 minutes before he had to run off. He drives a Prius, so he's environmentally conscious.
Well, as a former inhabitant of Middle Earth, you kind of should be.
That's right.
Like,
yes.
I don't think that Saruman is driving a Prius.
Yeah,
probably
right.
Driving a tank or something. Like a Hummer.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So.
Wow. Well, that was some occasion then. Oh.
It was, and it totally came together. Like Corey emailed me the weekend before and said, "I'm going to be in LA on Tuesday."
Mm.
So I said, "I'll come hang out with you on the set." Took the day off
Sweet.
Of work and just hung out on the set of this thing. Boy, you'd be amazed how many people they had on the crew. They had like between 30 and 40 people there working.
Wow.
These video game companies have a lot of money.
Well, a lot of these video games sometimes are more higher profile than movies because there's so much money to be made in that industry. And sometimes the production is actually much more complicated than shooting a full-length theatrical movie. So, because, of course, the story is you have to entertain people for 20, 30 hours. So that is so much more work than with a movie. Of course, a movie also has especially with the special effects, and live actors, it's a different animal, so you can't really compare them. But it is a full grown industry right now. It's no longer like, oh yeah, and then of course there's this game. So do you think there's going to be a game about The Hobbit, or did you hear anything about? They have to do a tie-in.
I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're working on it. We didn't really talk to the Warner Brothers people about it, but I'm sure they're working on it. And now that I see the way that their new strategy here, I'm sure there'll be multiple games on The Hobbit. There'll be one for each movie, and then there'll be several side stories and prequels and.
Probably.
I'm sure they'll be working on games that will fit in between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. And
the interesting thing is that Warner also is now the owner of Turbine, who makes Lord of the Rings Online.
Yep.
So, and previously, we always heard that, Lord of the Rings Online, that's kind of, you know, they only have the license for the books, not for the movie. So they kind of get close to the looks of the movie, but they can't really use the music or any of the stuff of the movies. But of course, now Warner having this broader license for other games, that's good news, I think, for Tolkien gaming in general.
Mm-hmm. Because yeah. We should get some folks on here one of these days from or on Secrets of Middle Earth from Turbine to chat.
Oh yeah, that would be wonderful.
I think we can pull it off now. The Middle Earth Network people have been in touch with them, and I now have people at I know people at Warner Brothers Interactive now, so I think we can pull it off.
We're still very unknown to a lot of those, even the people of the OneRing.net. I don't think that mm-hmm. they're aware that we're doing these shows, or some people might have told them about us, but. We're still such a small player compared to the big guys out there.
So the Warner Brothers Interactive people really, like, I think they're very interested in building community. And so they sponsored, the OneRing.net went to Dragon Con a few weeks ago. And the Warner Brothers sponsored their trip, just paid for their gas and stuff. And the lady said, the lady I talked to from Warner Brothers said, it's so little money, mm-hmm. I mean,
for them,
we don't care. We want to do all this stuff. We want to reach out to you guys and be involved with you guys because you guys are our fan base and our audience. And we want you guys to know that we are real Tolkien fans ourselves. So,
well, that's definitely the impression that I get. Those games are made with a lot of love, and if you see just the artwork, the detail, you can tell that this is just not just a cheap let's whip up a video game and just replace, take any other game that we have and just replace the graphics, which they do or used to do for a lot of these franchise based video games, but for these Tolkien things, there's a whole, it's almost like an art. You've got this amateur art where you've got all these fans that are making music or telling stories in the overall world of Tolkien, but in a way, video games, they've turned into an art as well, and definitely on par with the film industry, and in a way, much more flexible than the film industry. Because look at the Hobbit movies. It takes them 2 years to produce them, 4 years to roll them out, and then it's done. It's over. You've basically created, 4 hours of entertainment. With these video games, the opportunities are endless. Like Lord of the Rings Online, that's been going on for years and years and years. And mm-hmm. we're only now going to Rohan, let alone if we travel further and go to Mordor and everything. It's going to be... It's just so amazing that nowadays you can... actually dwell in visually and you can just be in Middle Earth and have and experience adventures and stories where you determine the outcome of the story by your actions. That is just taking storytelling to a whole different level, and I just love it. All right, let's see, where are we in our show notes? It's already almost time to wrap up, but not entirely so. There was snow in Auckland a while ago.
I don't think over a month ago. That was pretty weird. First time in like decades.
Now, are there any moments during the story that where they would need snow? I guess if they're traveling.
I really don't think so. I don't remember.
There is this one scene where they, aren't they hiding for the snow trolls, or is that Lord of the Rings? Am I confusing the stories? I guess that for the Lonely Mountain, they could do snow if the mountain is high enough.
I don't think it's described as desolate and they mostly, when they're describing the visuals of the Lonely Mountain in that area, they're mostly just talking about the desolation of the dragon, and so but they don't really get into temperature.
They do travel the Misty Mountains.
I feel remiss because I feel like we should be able to. I should know this from the timeline and the seasons that they're traveling through. And my intuition is no, that there's not any snow.
Well, we always kind of pretend that we don't know these things so that the listener can feel superior. It's like, of course there is snow.
Yeah, what's wrong with you, idiots?
I should be an expert. I should host this podcast. No, actually, they go to the Misty Mountains. That's where they're caught by the goblins. I'm just, mm-hmm. I'm Googling this, but so So there could be snow, and the Misty Mountains, that's a snow area. So, but I guess that if they need snow, they'll make it. They're probably not going to wait for this, you know, once in a century event that there is a bit of snow in, on the
other. Yeah, no, I bet. I'm guessing what they did is they gave them the day off, like from school, and said, "Oh no, go enjoy the weather."
Probably yes. So last week I mentioned that they were filming some scenes for the second movie. Because of the absence of Martin Freeman, he had to go to the UK for the second batch of Sherlock Holmes movies or films. But there were only a few scenes without him involved. Do you have any idea what they could have filmed?
My intuition would be things related to the White Council, the Siege of Dol Guldur, that kind of stuff. The parts of the story where Gandalf has broken off from the party, but we're following him in the movie.
So kind of the extended part of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually
that's
a good guess.
But there are
a couple.
There's a couple scenes where the dwarves wander off in Mirkwood when the dwarves are in the dungeons.
Hmm. Cool. Well, yeah. It could be just smaller scenes and perhaps even second unit stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time, Martin Freeman is just absolutely vital to the movies. And I guess that I'm just looking forward to seeing his, you know, some snippets of his performance, because Peter Jackson seems to be super excited about Martin Freeman and the way that he portrays
really
Bilbo, and definitely you needed an actor that could be, you know, at the height of the Bilbo that we know from the previous trilogy. You know, you need someone who can carry the whole movie. And well, what I've seen from Martin Freeman in Sherlock and in other movies, he definitely knows. He can do this. He can pull this off. It's going to be brilliant. Well, the music is already playing in the background, which means that we're wrapping up this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. We want to thank you for listening and invite you back for future episodes. Sometimes we might have a week where we take some time off. Next week, I will be in the United States for our Catholic New Media Conference in Kansas City. More information about that on cnmc.sqpn.com. So that's cnmc.sqpn.com. So I'm not sure what the online situation will be and if I will be able to do a show. But if I can, I will, of course. And otherwise, we'll be back the week after that with more news from the world of Tolkien and The Hobbit. Leave us a review on iTunes if you have some time. Just type in Secrets of the Hobbit and that will bring you to our page on iTunes. And we love those reviews. It gives us valuable feedback on how to improve the show. But you know, it actually is more important for other people to discover the show. And we've got already a sizable audience, but it can be much bigger considering how many people love The Hobbit and would love to listen to a show like this. So tell your friends and family, your kids, your neighbors, your Facebook followers, your Twitter friends, let them know that this show is out there and send us some feedback. You can send your own email and feedback and questions to Tolkien@sqpn.com, or you can let us know via our Facebook page. Just look for Secrets of the Hobbit, or follow us on Twitter. SQPN Hobbit is the name of our account. Dave, thanks so much for being on the show, and well, hopefully next time we'll be back with even more exciting news about the world of The Hobbit and Tolkien. And well, we end with our traditional greeting. May the hair on your toes never fall off. Have a great Hobbit day, everyone. And Bilbo and Frodo, happy birthday.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.